At the age of 16, my guest pianist Leon Fleischer made his debut at Carnegie Hall, a debut that turned out to be historic. He began playing the piano at the age of 4, was accepted to study with Arthur Schnabel when he was 9, and went on to become one of the world's most celebrated pianists. Fleischer's recordings of the Beethoven Piano Concerti, performed with the Cleveland Orchestra under the direction of George Sell, is considered the definitive version of those works. From those recordings, here is Leon Fleischer performing the opening of the 5th concerto, The Emperor. In 1964, at the height of his career, Fleischer was struck with a muscular problem in his right hand that made it too difficult and painful to play. He turned to conducting and began performing the piano repertoire written for the left hand only. In 1981, Fleischer had surgery, allowing him to play with his injured right hand for short periods. The next year, he performed with both hands in a concert with the Baltimore Symphony. He's continuing therapy on his right hand, but still devotes most of his time to teaching and conducting. He is the artistic director of the Tanglewood Music Center, music director of the Kennedy Center's Theater Chamber Players, and a professor of music at Johns Hopkins University. Fleischer has recently developed an interest in ballet, and I asked him how it ties into his other work in music.
All this has to do with movement, with gesture, with momentum, with drive, whatever you want to call it. And I've discovered that people who sit at this instrument, the piano, and depress any number of levers in any kind of succession at any kind of speed don't get an opportunity, really, a sufficient opportunity, to learn how to express gesture and movement. And I find myself in my classes, in my lessons, kind of striding around the room and waving my arms and demonstrating, like a conductor very much will, to exemplify shapes of phrases, shapes of movements. And it came to me. My wife takes ballet 2 or 3 times a week, in addition to her teaching of piano and everything else. And it came to me that this is really very, very clearly demonstrative of what I'm trying to say. So I started recommending to my students to take ballet, to take movement courses. And then, of course, it came to me, if I recommend that for them, I'm certainly going to have to be the first to do it.
Do you feel any change?
Yes. You mean personally? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's a marvelous exercise. It's a great activity. It's truly wonderful. And I have the benefit of having a very gifted teacher, and it does clarify that sense of continuity, that sense of momentum, the sense of suspension, many of the elements that are in music are inherent. Ballet is just a kind of physical manifestation to a certain extent of what music is. It certainly gives me a far greater awareness of the quality of the gesture that's used.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading about you that you said you, when you first started conducting, you were so used to, with your instrument as your art form, sitting down at something,
yes,
that you started sitting down.
Yes.
You conducted sitting down.
Right. It was very unnatural for me to be standing in front of a group of musicians.
Why did you get up?
It seems a little affected to remain sitting unless you're, you know, in a physical condition that requires it. It's easier for all the musicians to see you. And that's really mm-hmm. kind of the way it's done.
You didn't want to call that much attention to yourself
yeah,
doing that.
Yeah. And also I feel a lot more comfortable, natural doing it now.
You know, I rarely hear accomplished conductors talk anymore about that first moment when they picked up a baton and realized, you know, I guess you must get beyond all that. And realize that when you did this, when you moved this way, they did something. Do you remember?
When I really first became aware that a good orchestra, which is, you know, made up of 90, 100 good, experienced musicians, will respond to this, really to the slightest differentiation of in a movement, I was suddenly filled with almost with a kind of dread, with a kind of fear. Because when you look at great conductors, when you look at a Klemperer or a Furtwängler or von Karajan, it seems so simple. It seems almost simplistic. You see some conductors who are terribly fancy, terribly elegant, and or who are something like, you know, they look like Errol Flynn wielding his épée in The Flying Pirate or whatever the name of the picture he used to make. But you look at the really great ones, and it looks like your little 7-year-old does in front of the mm-hmm. the Victrola. Until you begin to realize that what looks simple is really a distillate of decades of experience. They don't need all the fancy stuff, and in a way, it's not only the arm movement, but in great conductors, it's eye contact, and not just looking at the player, because that can be very intimidating in a way. In fact, one of the things you have to learn as a conductor is not to look at the player in the orchestra that has the solo.
Oh, really?
Oh, particularly with horn players. If a horn has a very important solo or a great call, never look at him before it happens. That's terrible. Ignore him.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the instruments that do the accompanying and give him absolutely as much psychological freedom as possible. So when I first realized that their response is that sensitive.
Why dread?
Because then you have the responsibility to be, you have the obligation to be responsible for every gesture that you make, you know. Can't mm-hmm. be any accidents, can't be... You really have to begin to work at conducting the way an instrumentalist works at his instrument.
Was there a sense that first time when you took that baton and raised it in the air and first downbeat in the orchestra came forth with this sound? Mm. Was it thrilling? Would you
No.
describe it as thrilling?
It was scary as hell. Because there is a lag time between when you make the movement and when the sound appears in most orchestras. There are some conductors, George Sell was one of them, that insisted that the moment the stick in its downward arc hit a certain point, that was when he wanted the sound. There are some orchestras, I think the best example of which is the Berlin Philharmonic, is that after the stick hits that point, there is often a lag of almost, if not more, than a full second, which is an enormous amount of time. I remember specifically, this was back in the 60s, I played Mozart's C major concerto with Sell and the Berlin Philharmonic. We were guests at the Salzburg Festival. And the Berlin Philharmonic was the orchestra of Furtwängler at that time, who who's the subject of no end of extraordinary stories, whose downbeat seemed to tremble in the air as it went slowly from head level down to waist level, and where in the midst of that voyage the orchestra would come in with a pum, you know, absolutely together. It's, you know, those are the great mysteries of life. And we started the first fanfare chord, the opening chord, big C major chord, and Sell made his gesture, and the orchestra came in very late, full second late, and he stopped. "Gentlemen, no, I want it with the beat. And he spent a good 5 minutes getting that chord placed exactly where he wanted it with the beat. It's a great orchestra. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they got it fine. Came to the performance. He gives the downbeat, and the chord is a full second later again. they have a habit of doing what is safe for them. They have a mm-hmm. great team pride, and just because they have a guest coach, you know, they ain't going to change their system of play.
I hate to say it, but it sounds smart to me.
It is, in a way.
Sell, and I noticed something in your publicity kit. A while back, you received lots of attention for a record you made of the 5 Beethoven piano concertos with the Cleveland Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are always saying they're still considered definitive.
Mm-hmm.
What do they mean? What are they talking about? For people who don't listen to classical music all of the time, what is happening with those 5 concertos that made people say that? And your performance?
You know, it's the first time I've ever been asked that question. Really, very impressive, very impressive. Let's see, they were made 57, 58, 59, and around there. Well, they're still selling. I guess is one possible answer.
Uh-huh.
I really can't speak to that other than to say it's, you know, it was one of the great orchestras of the world in its heyday under one of the great conductors of the world.
Yeah.
We had a kind of musical and spiritual rapport that was really quite extraordinary. It was almost personal. It was very curious because there was comparatively little personal contact between the two of us because we both had our you know, individual careers and we were both very busy. But in terms of age, I guess I was I fit into the generation that was old enough or young enough to be his son.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds a wee bit trite, but there was in a musical sense, it was very much like father and son. In the most ideal of circumstances, in other words, it wasn't a parent that insisted that the son follow the precepts of the parent. It was a father that was supportive, proud, and of the child, and perfectly willing to let the child be himself with every confidence in the integrity of the child. You know, one of those ideal family kind of relationships.
Mm-hmm. Are you always searching for it again? Do you want to?
Oh, sure. That's one of the great things about making music. It's one of the drawbacks as well, because you can on one evening you can have a great performance, and the next evening or two evenings later, you have to go out and play the same piece. You have to get back in shape for it.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a week later, a month later, whatever it is. It has to be done again, and yet that's the refreshment of it, and you are not locked in to one concept. You know, it's always a growing learning experience. You don't get penalized for changing your mind.
Sometimes it strikes me how similar music is to theater, and how I keep imagining the casting person in all of this, someone sitting back and saying, trying to create that moment, not just this time the right set designer, the right actor, the right play, but in this case, the right conductor, the right soloist, and the right orchestra, to make that, for instance, that time that you had that triad with them, with Sel, to make that happen again someplace.
Yeah. Well, it's truly astounding. In fact, I think it's probably a little, in a way, a little different from the theater. In that, I think most great musicians will accept the premise that the music is really greater than the sum of its parts, meaning soloist, conductor, orchestra. So that you start off from a point of modesty, if you will, before the masterpiece of the music. And I'm speaking with the best artists. It's usually the artists who are less than the best that become very insistent upon their way as the only way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, in the theater, there are extracurricular, what I would call extracurricular elements, such as maybe appearance, the appropriateness of the appearance of the actor or actress for that specific role. They might conceptually and even artistically do a marvelous role, but they're not terribly believable, let's say, from the point of view of the way they look. You know, if you saw I don't know why I'm getting back to Errol Flynn a second time. But, you know, if you saw an Errol Flynn as a Cyrano, it doesn't work. He might have, I doubt it, of course, but he might have done it, even if he had did the best Cyrano, it just you know, wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. And I don't think these considerations enter into music.
Pianist and conductor Leon Fleischer is my guest. We'll talk more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Leon Fleischer is my guest. In the mid-60s, he was struck with a muscular disorder in his right hand, which prevented him from playing the piano. He then discovered a piano repertoire written for the left hand only. We're going to listen to part of a recording Fleischer made of Ravel's Concerto in D for the left hand. Why did composers start making music for the left hand?
Well, the vast majority of music for the left hand was due to a terrible accident that happened to a pianist in the First World War. His name was Paul Wittgenstein, and he had his right arm shot off as a result of the war. I think he was either brother or cousin to Ludwig Wittgenstein, the philosopher, very well-to-do family. And with a kind of extraordinary personal courage, he would not accept that as an end to his career. Mm. And he commissioned the composers of the day to write works for the left hand.
How great. Is anyone doing it for the right hand? Did anyone?
It's also an interesting question. There is virtually, in comparison to what's written for the left hand, there is virtually nothing written for right hand alone.
Isn't that something?
But that's curiously enough, for musical reasons, in that it is a demonstration of the fact that of the three elements of music, rhythm, harmony, and melody, though melody is the one that we all whistle, we don't whistle harmony particularly, and we don't whistle rhythm particularly, that in fact melody is the least important. Hmm. Because when you play with the left hand, you are to a large extent down in the bass, where you have the possible of the harmonic fundament, which is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you move around the piano and you can tap the tune out with your thumb, but most of the hand has to be involved with making harmony and rhythm.
Hmm.
And if you were up in the top of the piano, it doesn't make it. Wouldn't make it. There's a gentleman in Chicago named Norman Malone, who who has made a doctoral study, wrote his thesis on the left-hand literature, and he's come up with over 300 works for left-hand alone.
Isn't that something?
So, you know, one can have a career.
Yeah, a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
My guest has been pianist and conductor Leon Fleischer. CBS Records has been issuing on compact disc many of his classic recordings with George Sell and the Cleveland Orchestra. I'm Faith Middleton, and this is Fresh Air.